Thank you. So, as usual, we begin with a wholesome motivation or bodhicitta motivation. So, with this special motivation or attitude, what we're going to do is we're going to learn or listen how to practice Dharma, whether we say for the sake of ourself or for the sake of infinite sentient beings. So there is a King of Aspiration prayer, and there is a Samyanda Bhadra's Aspiration prayer. So what Rinpoche thinks is these two are two separate prayers. He don't think these are two as one prayer. That's just Rinpoche's opinion, but he is not 100% sure. So anyway, Andrew and Claire requested to teach about how to purify the obscurations and how to accumulate the merit. So what we're going to do is we're going to listen how to purify and how to accumulate merit in conjunction with the seven limb practice. So if we want to accumulate the merits and we want to purify our negativities, then we need a object or a field. So how, what kind of field or object we rely on to purify and to accumulate merit. So the basis to do these two things is should be based on the six preparatory practice or jorche. So if somebody really wanna practice, then it begin with the six preparatory practice or jorche. Or if somebody wanna intellectually to learn something, then that's a different thing. So how we're gonna do this is, first we need to begin with a prostration or the salutation. So to do the prostration or the salutation, we need an object. So to do that, first we need to invoke or invite the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas. So in order to invoke the supreme merit field, first we need to clean up the place. So this, to clean the place, is, you know, not a small thing. You know, we shouldn't neglect it, because it's a really very important thing, you know, not only to do our practice or the meditation, but in our workplace too, the surrounding environment, cleanness is very crucial. So it all depends on our attitude or the motivation. For example, when we caregiving for anybody who is needed, if we do it with a good motivation, then that can be a Dharma practice too. So if we directly say where we live, our house, it is said in the scripture that we need to clean our place, if we could, three times a day. If that is not possible, then at least we should clean up our places, house and surroundings, at least one time in the morning. So whether there is a dust or not, at least we need to clean once a day. So why we need to do this is when we sweep the dust, you know, we shouldn't concentrate only on the external dust, but it is said that dust is not the external dirt, but is the dust, but it is internal, like dust of attachment and dust in terms of hostilities and so on. So this cleaning the place is very important. In the Buddha's time, this historical Buddha Shakyamuni's time in India, there is a good patron of Buddha who always served and cleaned the, the courtyard where Buddha resides. So one time that patron was so, busy, he didn't get a time to clean the courtyard. So, Buddha himself came out and cleaned the courtyard by Buddha himself. And also there are many stories that tells about the importance of cleaning the place and the surroundings. So if we go elaborate on that, it will take a lot of time. So maybe morning 2 hour session will be end with sweeping the place. So if we do that, that would be not reasonable, because nowadays there are many people really emphasizing on the environment and global warmings and like that. So in India, long time ago, there are in one town or village, when the child born, they don't live. So, they lost all the childs in one time. And then there is an old lady, so she asks, in future, if child was born, then you can give it to me. So then later on, one couple got a baby boy. And then the couple give it to that old lady, and old lady filled the baby's mouth with butter, and then give it to somebody and tell that, you take the baby and go to that crossing road, and the arahats and whoever pass through, please ask to bless this baby boy so that he can live long. So then that person took the baby to the road crossing down there, and the Buddhas passed through that path, and many bodhisattvas and arahats and so on passed through, and then old lady told that ask the blessings, and if the baby survived, then bring back, or if the baby didn't survive after the sunset, then leave it there. Then the person took the baby to that road crossing, and then Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and many arahats passed through, and the person asked the blessing to that baby boy, and then everybody blessed the baby, and then baby survived after sunset. Then, the person bring back the baby to that old lady, and then later on, they care the baby, and baby live long, and baby grown up, and baby live long, and then eventually baby become a great scholar named Arya Lamchenpa, or the Pakpa Lamchen. So then again, later on in that place, one baby boy was born. And then the couple take the baby to that old lady, and old lady asks one young lady to take the baby as before, like before, take the baby to the road, and whoever comes through, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, and ask the blessings. And then, this time, the young lady was kind of lazy, and she took the baby to a small path or small road, like an alley, and then he waited there and nobody passed through. So then almost at the end of the day, it sunsets, the Buddha knew through the through his clairvoyance, and then, you know, deliberately Buddha came to see the that baby to that small alley and bless the baby, and barely baby survived. And then that, you know, second baby grown up, and then the his boy's parent as a scholar to teach the boy. And, you know, then the teacher wrote a stanza or the shlok. And then baby boy, you know, work hard on that one, on that four lines. And, you know, all day how much he work hard, but he could not able to memorize it. Then they took the boy to the Buddha, and then Buddha bless him. So then Buddha bless him and told the boy that, you know, you go to the monastery where the monks gather, and outside there is a lot of, you know, shoes and all those things. Then Buddha told him to clean up the monks' shoes and clean up the courtyards and all those things to purify that boy's obscuration. Then, you know, he Buddha told him that, you know, when you sweep and clean, that you are not cleaning the, you know, dust, soil dust, but you are cleaning the dust of the mind, like ignorance and so on. Then he reflect on the what the Buddha told him. Then, you know, gradually his intelligence improved, and then, you know, could memorize a little easier than before. Then he worked hard and study hard, and then eventually he became the arahat, and he is called the Pakpa Lamchungpa. And also in Tibet too, one of the Panchen Lama's incarnation always cleaning the place, and then his broom really worn out, and he wrapped with a yellow cloth over the, you know, broom, and then later on that broom became a kind of relic, or you know, like that precious, and kept in the monastery. So if we could do the cleaning thing, cleaning the place and sweeping all around and like that, we could able to really try our best, then in this life too, you know, we will be able to guard our vows and pledges without any transgressions or any obstacles, and as well as in future when we attain Buddhahood, then, you know, it would be it will become the causes of that Buddha's pure land. So this is in terms of the Dharma practice, but, you know, about the taking care of the environments, and, you know, about the nowadays this, you know, global warmings and like that, for this you guys might have a better understanding and better knowledge than him, than Rinpoche. So if our house or the room is full of junks around, then the most benefit would be we will sleep well. And when we wake up in the morning, then our eyes are full of burgers and, you know, that slippers. So we will live here, and, you know, almost it is 1 hour already. So now, as, you know, Claire and Andrew requested, you know, how to set up the altar. So, you know, we will begin with that. So maybe, you know, you guys don't have that kind of consideration, but in Tibetan we got a kind of disease that considers some statues of the image of the Buddha or Bodhisattvas like old one and made out of gold are more precious than the, you know, some made out of, you know, clay and like that. So, and we always have a kind of disease that, you know, we consider our altar set up, the images and tankas and so on, not as a object of offering, but we consider as a kind of possession. So one thing, this happened because, you know, maybe earlier, but after 1959, the old monasteries in Tibet, you know, they have a lot of statues of different times. You know, they are all the business people. They stole the statues and sold to the some people who buy those things. So these are the fault of we Tibetans, you know, that, you know, consider as a possession, and we put a price tag on, you know, those images. Those are our mistake or our fault, and you guys' fault is that you set up the statues and all those things everywhere, in the stairways, outside, in the bathrooms, and everywhere. So we should acknowledge our fault and mistakes. And it is said that in front of the, you know, thangkas and in front of the Buddha's images and, you know, so on, wherever those things are present, you know, we should behave. You know, we don't behave, you know. We do all sort of disrespect and bad behaviors in the presence of those, you know, object of refuge. That is really wrong. What that indicate is that we don't have a true refuge in Three Jewels. So in the society, all the Dharma books and statues and thangkas all over, like it happened like a, you know, merchandise. But, you know, that is the other thing. But in ourselves, we should be not like that, considered as a really reverend objects, and should not consider as a merchandise. So this is our mistake. Then how we should correct it is that when we set up our altar, in the center of the altar, the main object of our altar is the image of historical Buddha Shakyamuni. And the image or the statue or the picture of Lama Tsongkhapa and any of our gurus can be set up behind the Buddha Shakyamuni. If we have an altar is big enough, you know, to set up, then, you know, Buddhas will be in all in one line, and the Bodhisattvas will be on line, and gurus will be on one line, and so on. So, and we have a very shortage of a place, Buddha Shakyamuni in the center, and on the right side, the Bodhisattva Maitreya, and on the left side, Bodhisattva Manjushri, as we recite through the text. And the meditational deities can be set up in the right or on the left of the Buddha Shakyamuni. And the Dharma protectors should not be set in the same place of the Buddha Shakyamuni. It should be lower or on the second line. below the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And in the Tibetan society, there is a problem that, you know, some consider the Dharma protector so high that, you know, they consider Dharma protector higher than the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. This kind of a problem still exists in the Tibetan society. So the Dharma protector are manifest as a Dharma protector, even though it is in the emanation or in the nature of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, but they manifest, emanate as in the form of a Dharma protector. So when appears in the form of Dharma protector, then their job is to protect the, you know, Buddha Dharma and its practitioners. So like, you know, we have a guard dog. So the guard dog, you know, has a place not equal to the master. So it is like, same like that. So, you know, the Dharma protector should be set up in the lower than the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. But, you know, if the time, if the place is limited, then there is a flexibility. And, you know, the Dharma books can be set up on the right side of the altar, and on the left, the stupas and so on will set up on the left side of the, you know, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. So we break here.